Hey, 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 it is Wednesday, and you know what that means? It's another episode of Snipes and Stripes. My partner in crime, Jeremy Roenick, is traveling today, so I have the pleasure of having Dennis Bernstein in. Before I get to Dennis, a couple of housekeeping things. Want to thank our sponsors, Whiskey in the Wild, Protected Neck Guards, and Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about everything out there. Head to the website today, or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet Online, where the game starts. Welcome, Dennis. Dennis Bernstein, I listen to you all the time on Sirius XM. I love listening to you there. I also know you're the senior writer for the Fourth Period. Mm-hmm. You're a staple in the LA market when it comes to hockey. And I figured what a perfect guy to bring on to talk about really the what I would like, because I know how knowledgeable you are on the Western Conference teams.
Sure.
And how we can talk about each matchup. But first of all, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Bill. Great to be with you. I'm in Edmonton right now, waiting for a 8:20 p.m. local puck drop, which isn't optimal when you want to go out for a drink after the game, but excited about game two here in Edmonton.
Oh, that's right. The old 8:20 start. That's a bummer. Yeah, I used to hate that myself.
So. For sure. It's a long night, brother. We just, you know what, all the media here, we just pray for no overtime. That's what we don't want. We don't
exactly.
want any overtime. Yet. But other than that, we're looking forward to game two.
How was the atmosphere in at the game the other night? Was it phenomenal?
Yeah, it's the start. At the start, when the entire crowd sings "Oh Canada," and I'm an American, and I still get emotional of it. Just an amazing crowd, a great facility, a great arena. I always tell people, you know, people might bang on Edmonton, but if you want to see the greatest player in the game, Connor McDavid, come and stay in a beautiful hotel and go to a brand new arena. Come to Edmonton, stay at the JW Marriott, go to Rogers Place, and watch Connor and Leon play. It's playoff hockey in Canada is like nothing else. It's so great. It's what makes this game so great, Tim.
It really is. And I don't see it in the U.S. markets like I see it in, not even as much in Toronto, but Calgary and Edmonton. Every fan is wearing a jersey.
No question.
It doesn't matter your age. It doesn't matter. It's every fan has got a jersey on. I don't see that in other markets like that.
Yeah, maybe at the Garden, MSG, but other than that, no, everybody, when, you know, there's a pedestrian walkway to go from the hotel to the arena. So when it's minus 33 in Alberta, it's great because then you can just walk in without being, fighting the elements. But yeah, as I'm walking into the arena, everybody wears a jersey. Even if it's last game one, it was a Jordan, someone was wearing a Jordan Everly Oilers jersey. Yes, everybody's either in blue or orange. It's a great spectacle. I love it. It's part of the reason I love this game so much.
So I had Jim Fox on last week, and I've had a strong affection for Drew Doughty. I met Drew years ago at a charity golf event in New Brunswick. He came out to support Randy Jones at the time, the defenseman.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So Drew and I just hit it off, and then Kopey was one of my favorite players, some favorite people in the game.
Yeah.
So I'm rooting for those guys. I'm not going to ask you how you stop Connor McDavid because you can't.
Right.
Does LA, can they make this a series, Dennis?
They have to contain Connor. Like it's a win. If you could keep Connor, let's say it's a 6 or 7 game series to, you know, 5 or 6 points over another 5, 6 games, it's fine. You can't have Connor getting 5 assists, Peeler. It won't work. You'll lose. You go out in 4. So they're going to have to find a way. And when you go back to game one, 45 shots on goal for Edmonton, it's no way to beat them. Right? And the challenge in game one, which they really never did, what's LA been known for all year? Defense and penalty kill.
Right.
What didn't work in game one? Defense and penalty kill. They never set up their 1-3-1. Too much time and space for the Oilers in the neutral zone. Too much speed. Odd man rushes. And the penalty kill has just been abysmal. You know, I think since going back to last year's playoffs, the Oilers are 18 for 36 on the power play. Like, What in what universe can you win series by with your penalty kill at 50%? They have to find a way to limit time and space with these guys, or else it's going to be a very short series, shorter than their last two that they've played between these two teams.
Does Jim Hiller, does he have a different system? Because I can't tell. You know, listen, there was a reason I was a referee, because I was a shitty hockey player. Okay, so I really don't know a lot about systems. And is his system that much different than Todd's system?
No, here's why. There was no time to install a new system midseason. Right. There's not enough practice time. They travel, they practice. No, he's going with what they had, you know, at the beginning of the season and what's worked for this team. Now, they were, you know, really good defensively, the second best penalty kill, but they're sticking with the 1-3-1. There's just no time and opportunity. You could go man to man, but when are you going to install it? You know, when are you going to instruct the guys on how to execute a man on man? So what you see is what you get. Nothing's really changed. The only thing that's changed between Hiller and McClellan is that Jim is not afraid to change his line combinations. And Todd, when the Kings went through their valley, their deep valley, when ultimately Todd got dismissed, they won 3 out of 17 games. And Todd, you know, I covered the team regularly. Yep. Todd said, look, we're in one right now. We're going to get out of it. And Todd was resistant to change. He believed that the lineup he put there every night was eventually going to turn the tide. It never did. Jim became the coach, and he's very willing to change line combinations, not so much the defense pairings. And I asked him that this morning, like, you're so liberal with your changing line combinations, but you're very, very stoic when it comes to changing defense pairs. He said there's more chemistry. It's much more difficult to change defense pairings. So you'll see combinations of, you know, new lines. At, you know, 5 minutes in, I always tell people, whatever you read in the pregame with respect to lines, or even at the warm-up in game one, Jim, like, they had Fiala with Lizotte and Trevor Lewis. I'm like, that's a really odd combination in the warm-up. And he changed it. He put Fiala with Dubois and Byfield. So, yeah, there just wasn't enough time. And it executes well. These players know how to execute it. They just couldn't set it up, couldn't execute in game one. And that's why you saw a 7-4 score.
Is Cam Talbot going to start tonight?
Yeah, I asked him about that, yeah. And here's the thing. I asked him after game one about Cam's performance. And look, 7 goals is a lot, actually 6, because there's one empty net goal. He said, look, the forwards didn't help the defense. The defense didn't help the goaltender. So I'm not putting this on the goaltender. I asked him this morning, you know, who are you going with? He said, Cam Talbot. And I said, so I assume you're absolving him basically of the performance in game one. He goes, yeah, I'm not going to talk about game one anymore. But what I suspect him is that Cam's on a much shorter leash. If he gives up a couple of bad goals in the first period, it's 2-0 goal in the second, you might see David Rittich in game two. But here's the thing. It's not even about Rittich or Talbot. They're system goaltenders, like in football. You know, there's a system quarterback. Maybe he doesn't have the biggest arm, whatever. Talbot and Rittich are not designed to have 45 save performances.
No,
they're not Hellebuck. They're not Demko. They're not Bobrovsky. They're not Vasilevsky. They need 27 to 30 shots. It's just too much work for these guys. And when your system that's supposed to prevent shots and shot suppression doesn't happen, you get the result that you saw on Monday night. So it'll go with Talbot again, but it could be a short leash. And if Cam even plays well but doesn't get the result tonight, you could see David Rittich in game three, because their numbers, when you look at the numbers, they're essentially the same, because, again, their system goaltenders in this 1-3-1 defensive system.
You're 100% right on that. And, you know, everybody was talking about, you know, I love Cam Talbot as a person. And
yeah, great man.
Just a great guy. But you're right. You look at the success that L.A. had in October, November, and to your point, it was because they were limiting teams to 25, yeah, 26, 27 shots. So I agree with you 100% on that. I don't want to spend too much time on this guy, because I'm sure you're probably sick of talking about him. And I've got my thoughts on him, and that's PLD, Pierre-Luc Dubois.
What a surprise, Peeler. What a surprise. You're going to bring him up. Okay.
40 points. You know what I want to ask you? How did he – were his numbers that good? And I looked it up the other day, and I saw he had 40 points this year. And I think it was 40, wasn't it? Were his numbers that good a few years ago, Dennis, to warrant a 8x8 or whatever his contract is? Like, or was it, you know, was it we get caught up in, as hockey people, in he's 6 foot, what, 3'4"? He's, you know, we need big down the middle. How did I don't know. I don't know if he's ever going to be that type of player.
He's not going to be a 100-point player. But what they wanted from this player was like 27 goals, 27 assists. He's not a hundred, you know, he's not a great facilitator, but he's a goal scorer. He's a goal scoring center. That's what they wanted from him. But 40 points, I'm sorry, it's not acceptable. It's not 16 goals, I think 20, you know, whatever the math is, 24 assists. That's not good enough. It's not good enough. He never drove play on the lines. They tried to pair him with Kevin Fiala to start the season. That didn't work because both guys need the puck to be effective. So did they get value for what they paid for him? Nope. But now, but here's the thing. He could have wiped this all away by having a great playoff because that's what everybody said. When you talk to Robitaille and Blake at the beginning of the season, we got him for game 83. Right. And so 82 games, it was a terrible 82 games, but you could have wiped the slate clean. He just doesn't have to show up, Peeler. He's got to produce. He's got to be an impact player in this series. He got a goal the other night. It was a fluke goal when it was garbage time. Yeah. He has to show up, more than show up. So, yeah, they got to. And here's the one concern I have, and I'll reference another player. Remember when Huberdeau signed that big contract when he got traded to Calgary and the first year was really bad?
Yeah.
Well, you can excuse that if your second year is really good. But Huberdeau's second year wasn't good either. And that's the concern I have. And now there's whispers because Dubois under the age of 26 that they can buy him out at one third of his contract, which would be a difficult thing to do. But when you look at the numbers and you look at the salary cap situation they're in right now, it's plausible. When you're looking at because you're looking at $1 or $2 million cap, it's granted for 8 or 9 years, but they're on the hook for $8.5 million for 7 more years. So is that an option? I'm not sure. And it would be really tough as Rob Blake for the general manager to sign him to a deal in 1 year and then buy him out the next. That's going to be difficult to do.
We've all seen his clips in Columbus and Winnipeg, his lackluster effort. You know, there's not an ISO cam on him the other night, so I'm watching the game, but I can't.
Yeah.
What would you – was his effort there? Like, did he look like he was engaged?
He wasn't bad. And the problem is, Peeler, is that – now, he had so much cover here when he came in. He set up to win because he had Kopitar and Deneau as the other two centers who one guy won the Selke and one guy could win the Selke. He didn't have to play defense. All he had to do was go in as a third-line center, have advantages on matchups. He should have been able to produce, and he didn't. He didn't drive lines. And part of the problem is he's a nonchalant player. His style isn't like a Trevor Moore or Blake Lizotte where they're giving every ounce of energy. He's just that type of player who glides through plays. And when you see him like with one hand on a stick, one of the fans said to me, like, I've never seen a guy that plays with one hand on a stick more than Dubois. The optics aren't great. And it looks because he looks like he plays that nonchalant way, it looks like he's drifting. And some nights he's invisible. Some nights he's not effective. It was a really bad season. But again, the narrative was we got him to beat the Oilers in the playoffs.
Right.
And he got a goal the other night, but he's got to step up his game. And you know, there's doubts that he can. I'll give him credit for one thing, though. With all the criticism, and there's been a ton of it, this guy doesn't hide. Never hides, never stays in the training room, is out in the locker room every day, answers the hard questions, even though people might not like the answers. Mm-hmm. I'll give him credit for one thing. He is not hidden from a very bad season. But it's go time. Right now, they need him. They need him to be effective and score against the bottom six of the Oilers. We'll see if it happens the rest of the series.
Do you think, because I personally, I think this is a better Edmonton team than last year just because of adding key third and fourth line players. Don't you feel that this Edmonton team is deeper than the Edmonton team last year?
They're way better 5-on-5. They're way better defensively, Tim. Way better defensively. That's the scary part about this team. When Knobloch come in, he just put up a different system, and they have been fantastic. You got your top pair of Bouchard and Ekholm. They've been great. The bottom four, you would think that you could get exposed to the bottom four with Nurse and CC and Desharnais but they haven't been. They have been a great defensive team since Knobloch took the reins once this team didn't start well. So that's the thing about it. And when you watch with respect to the Kings and the Oilers this year, Kings and Oilers played four games relatively close. They were competitive games. So now the fifth game wasn't competitive, and that's a concern because it's trending in the wrong direction. You also have beaten the Kings four straight times this season. It's not good, but yeah, they're a much better team. This team, in other seasons, they were top-heavy team. They're not as top-heavy this season, and they're absolutely a threat to at least to get to a cup final this season because I think they're far better defensively. And if Skinner makes the saves he's supposed to make, you know, they can get out of this round and maybe take their chances with, you know, I guess – now they're the winner of Dallas and Vegas, but they're a much better team. They are. They're much better equipped to win in the playoffs than they were the last couple of seasons.
I agree 100%.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Talking about Vegas, a lot, you know, this situation with Mark Stone, people are all up in arms, and I get it. Like, I had lunch yesterday with Jamal Mayers, and we were talking about it. Sure. Andy Strickland was there with us too, and guys, you know, and it kind of just bothers me. And Jamal said, "Well, hey, we did it in 2015 with Kaner, you know," and I didn't even know about that. And then obviously we know about Kucherov a couple of years ago. It doesn't seem that there's an appetite with the GMs to change anything on this.
Mm-hmm.
But what's your own personal opinion on it? That does it bug you a little bit? Like, 2 years in a row, Mark, listen, I understand you had a ruptured spleen, but 2 years in a row, you're coming back for game 83. It just doesn't sit well with me.
Well, I think the reason there's no appetite, Peeler, is because I think the GM says, the other GM say, that could be me. I could have a star player out and I don't want to vote to change the rules because next season it could be me, it could disrupt my chance to win the championship. I think that's why there's not that appetite. But would I have a problem with being cap compliant in the postseason? No. Would I have a problem with if a guy's not on the roster at game 82, he can't be eligible for the first round? No. But look, it's as part of the CBA, so it's got to be collectively bargained. I think it will be addressed in 2 years when the CBA is up, right? Mm-hmm. Does it disrupt the competitive balance of the league? I think it does, to be honest with you. But I just, to your point, Tim, I don't think there's enough appetite to change the rule at this point in time. Because really, according to the rule, they're not doing anything wrong. They're not breaking any rules, right? And I'll say this about Kucherov. Do you really think Tampa Bay didn't want Kucherov for the entire season?
No, exactly.
Of course not. Right. Exactly. But the timing is curious. And even Frank Saravelli said, the timing's very curious. It's not curious. It's for real. Like, I get it. I get why people are upset or complain about it. But until there's a majority that's willing to change the rules and the Players Association will agree with that, I think we're going to be status quo for the next two seasons.
Well, and then, of course, Stone's got to score less than into the game in Dallas. And I'm watching obviously the fans are going crazy.
But if I'm
the Dallas Stars, I'm wondering if a little bit of them is like, this pisses me off. Like, I got to play these guys. We got Hurdle in the lineup now. They already had a great team. Now we got Hurdle. We got Stone back. Do you think, you know, this should be a tremendous series. I can't wait to watch the game tonight. Do you think that Dallas can beat this team? Do you think that Dallas can beat Vegas? Because Vegas, early part of the year, I thought Vegas looked phenomenal. And then obviously
Started great.
And they had a slide. They haven't looked quite the same. But now are they do you think they're a team that could repeat? And second part of that question, do you think Dallas can beat them or is Vegas just too good?
Okay, so the one team that didn't care where they finished was Vegas, right? They're defending champs. They'll play anybody. They're a confident team, whatever, right? So are they a threat? Yeah, when you can put out Pietrangelo and Shea Theodore and the guys that you mentioned on the ice, and they've won a championship. Marcezo is always going to score big goals. Are they a threat? Absolutely a threat, even as an 8 seed. Can Dallas beat them? Look, I'll be transparent. For the fourth period, I picked Dallas to go to the Cup final, right? So can they beat them yet? Because when I watch Logan Thompson give up that third goal, like to Mason Marchment from the boards.
Yeah.
Like, people were surprised that Thompson started game one. He's going to start game two. I love Dallas. I think Jim Neal's done a fantastic job building that roster. I mean, you've got a kid on the third line and Wyatt Johnson, who's a 33 goal scorer as the third line center. But here's the weakness. And you saw it again in game one. It's the goalie, Jake Oettinger. Like he was sub 900 save percentage in the playoffs. He was sub 900 this season. He's a really good goaltender, but for some reason he didn't deliver. He didn't deliver in game one. The first four, it just wasn't acceptable. And that's the weakness in this team. So if you pick Vegas, you're probably picking them because you don't think Jake Ottinger is going to produce. They're going to score goals, but Jake's got to be better. It's as simple as that, Peeler. I think it's a toss-up. I think Dallas to win the series. But if Jake Ottinger is going to play like this the whole series, Vegas right. is going to move on.
Yeah, it should be fantastic. Talking about goaltending, we haven't seen, especially from a guy that I had picked, and he'll probably win the Vezina this year, Connor Hellebuck. You know, it's yeah. and not that they were they. It's not like he's let in bad goals, but it's not. You know, remember that stretch they went this year? I think it was 32 games or yeah. 30 games. They allowed two goals or less.
Goals or less. Yeah, right?
that's unbelievable to do that in the National Hockey League over that period of time. But going into that series. And mm-hmm. I love Nathan MacKinnon. He's one of my favorite guys to watch. I picked mm-hmm. Winnipeg to win yeah. that series. I think Winnipeg is a very underrated team for people that don't follow them and so on. What do you think of this series so far? And yeah, by the way, Gregoria yeah. was yeah. terrible in game one, but. Yeah. Kudos to him, came back last night with a great game.
Okay, so let's go back to the last couple of games of the regular season, okay? Colorado gave up 7 goals at home to Dallas and Winnipeg. Yep. And going into the series, my narrative was it's the best goalie in the playoffs against the worst goalie in the playoffs. But Connor Hellebuck's given up 10 goals in 2 games, Peeler. And when you watch the play made on the game-winning goal to Parisi, or what's he doing out of the net? He fumbled the puck and it's in the back of the net. I'm sorry. Now, the one thing about Colorado, you beat him 6 times in the first game. You didn't win. Like, right. So I don't know. This could be like every game could be 5-4, 6-5. Maybe I think it's a mental thing with Hellebuck at this point in time. Granted, they got a lot of snipers on Colorado, but that's not acceptable. I mean, you got to be better if you're kind of Hellebuck. Right. And that's how, and I granted, look, pound for pound, the roster, it's a better offensive team in Colorado. But the defensive prowess, Olia, shown by Winnipeg, hasn't shown up yet. Like, it's not good enough. So now it's a toss up. I thought the Jets would win in 6 games. Now I'm not sure. I'm really not sure because Hellebuck's got to win them a game. Right. He's got to win a game. He's a veteran winner. You got to stand up and now go into Denver and win a game and bring back home ice advantage to Winnipeg because I think it's a major advantage playing that little barn in Winnipeg. So it's been surprising how bad Hellebuck's played.
And we know how good Colorado was at home this year, Dennis.
Oh, yeah. Like 38-1 or something like that. 39-1 at home or something like that. So,
Nathan MacKinnon's point streak at home, it was 30 yep. some games, whatever it was. So, it's going to be a great series. There's so many good teams in the West, and I'm excited for every game going into mm-hmm. the Vancouver series. Mm-hmm. And I'm a friend of Rick Tocchet's. I love Tock. He'll probably get the coach of the year. I want him yep. to. I want him to have a great playoffs. But it's a young besides Miller.
Yeah.
Guys that haven't been there before.
No plenty of experience, yep.
Right? And I look at Nashville, Ryan O'Reilly, Roman Josi, guys that have been there. UC Saros has played a bunch of playoff games. And one guy that doesn't get mentioned a lot this year for Coach of the Year, and I think Andrew Brunette's done a tremendous job.
I agree, 100%. And he did it in Florida too, Peeler, and he doesn't get enough credit.
That was a great hire by Barry Trotz, bringing in Andrew Brunette. Yep. And now with, look at that legend. Hey, Dougie, okay. We've got Dennis Bernstein on. We're just talking about Nashville, Vancouver, and now they don't have Demko, Dennis. I think Nashville's going to win this series. I really do.
Yeah. Well, you look at last night, the way they got 14 shots on goal and win the game. Casey DeSmith, I watched Casey DeSmith down the stretch. He's not Thatcher Demko. He's not. And the moment was to – and look, the moment might have been a little bit too big for Pettersson. He had that open net. And you could – not that he missed the shot, Peeler, but, like, his reaction after missing the shot, that's pressure. Like, the pressure may be getting to him. And you're right about one thing. There's not a lot of playoff experience. And the game changes at game 83. It's that you got to bear down on the chances. You got to finish that shot. And I love Quinn Hughes, and he's been great as well. But again, a lot of guys, Brock hasn't scored a goal. And as much as I love Brock, he hasn't scored a goal in the first two games. So it's going to be a difficult road. And, you know, if you want to draw a parallel to the Blues in 2019 and Nashville now, it's Ryan O'Reilly, right? That's a gamer. That's a guy that's been there, a Conn Smythe winner. So, and he leads by example. He's been great in the first two games, even though they split. And now they go back to Nashville 1-1. It now rests in favor because, again, the Smith is not Demko, and that was a major advantage for them. You know that down the stretch, Vancouver didn't play well. I'm like, well, when Thatcher comes back, it's going to be fine. Right. Now he's pushing for the rest of the series. You got to be really confident of your Bruno and the Predators going into game three at home.
Well, Talk said in an interview yesterday or this morning, he goes, he's week to week. They didn't even use the expression day to day, week to week. So,
and Peely, you know that week to week is never 1 week.
No, it's not.
The thing I always tell people, week to week is never 1 week. So he's probably done for the series. And if they can survive, they'll need him for the second round. But now it's going to be a very difficult task because they don't have an advantage in net that they thought they would have coming in.
Well, and I guarantee you, Nashville smells blood in the water right now. And with those guys that you just talked about, you know, I would take my son Bronson to the Blues games and I'd say, just watch Ryan O'Reilly play. Just watch him play. This guy is an absolute stud. He is,
driven. He's focused. He doesn't make mistakes. He wins faceoffs. He does everything. He really does. It's a great signing. And, you know, look, I think the Leafs would be a lot better spot if they found the room for him than maybe Mitchell Marner, to be honest with you. I think he'd be better off. So the fact that he's in Nashville is a huge thing for the Predators.
Well, you know what? And I think Toronto wanted him back, and I don't want to speak for Ryan, but things that I heard, I don't think he was a big fan of the makeup of the locker room while he was there. So now that you brought up Marner, let's talk about Toronto. I've kind of beat up Austin a little bit. Yeah, mm-hmm. just from last year's playoffs, his lack, his kind of mm-hmm. I don't really care attitude. He did have a good game too. Do you think that now? Listen, after game one, I think a lot of people after game one in Boston thought this could be a very short series. Now after game two, right? Exactly. Now after game two, it's kind of flipped the other way. Where I think a lot of people are thinking, you know what? Toronto can win this series. Do you like the makeup of that team as far as, to your point, they don't have I don't see the leadership on that team. Mm-hmm. I love Jonathan Tavares. Jonathan Tavares has had a tremendous career.
He has.
Incredible numbers, but I don't see him as the guy that stands up in the room and calls people out because these guys need to be called out. What do you think of this team right now?
Well, I actually thought like this was the Leafs year, that they would find a way because, you know, even though the point totals for Zacha and Coyle are identical in the regular season to Krejci and Bergeron, I just think when push comes to shove in a big spot, they weren't going to deliver like those guys could or would. Right? But I thought they would win six games. But Peeler, 10 minutes into the game one, my pick was Toronto in six. I had regrets about that pick. I'm like, oh, no, here we go again. Here we go again. But when I watch the antics of Marchand in game two with that dive and stuff like that, I'm like, really? You can do that now? Like, do that in game 70, not in second game of the round. And Austin came up in a big spot. You get a beautiful goal and a great feed from Max Domi. I don't even think it's about the big guys because I think to some extent, like, I don't think Marner's going to be productive. I think he comes up small in the big spot. It's the depth guys. It's the Bertuzzi, the Domis, those guys, if they're going to win. And I think they have a puncher's chance now because I just don't think Boston is strong enough. And maybe now that they lost one game at home, maybe you start thinking about last season, blowing a 3-1 lead to Florida. And maybe they think, okay, maybe they lack the clutch gene at this point in time. So I give the Leafs a legitimate chance. I feel a lot better about my pick of Leafs and sick now than I did after game one because I thought it was a repeat of the last couple of series, the last couple of playoffs for the Leafs. But, you know, the tide's turned. Right? Because I'll be honest with you, Tim, in other seasons, they lose game two in overtime. 100%. And they found a way to win. And Tavares scored a goal and Matthews scored a goal. We know what's probably going on with Nylander right now. You know, it's a head thing, probably a concussion. And so will he play in game three? We're not really sure. But I think they have a puncher's chance to get out of the first round at this point.
you know, we this year, how many coaches did we have fired? Seven, nine?
It
is unbelievable.
I think there were 16 coaches changing since the end of last season, which is basically half the league.
Which is unbelievable. I know Brad Treliving gave Sheldon Keefe a 3-year deal in the summer. Mm-hmm. Did he not? Right?
Yeah.
If Toronto loses in the first round, does Keefe get fired?
Two words. Craig Berube.
Craig Berube, yeah. Well, that would be that would be a smart.
You have to, Phil. You have to. This is the Yankees of hockey. You have to start winning. You've got three $10 million players on the team. Like, you got to win. It's as simple as that. And I would feel bad for Keith, but you got to win. You got to be accountable for having a team that was supposedly, quote unquote, built to win, and you don't win. There's got to be accountability. You can't trade five players. So I would think that they would show Keith the door, and I think a guy like Craig Berube would be a great fit if they chose to go in that direction.
I know Buffalo tried to get Craig Berube, but I think they were trying to get him on the cheap. And
you
know what? He's in a position where he can sit and wait because he's going to be 100%. Now, another question, and I'm a big fan of Jimmy Montgomery. If he gets beat after the first round, do they give him a pass because of losing Bergeron and Krejci? And you know what? They had a good year. They had a better year than a lot of people thought they
would. Oh, yeah. Right? Me included. I thought they were a wild card team. Yeah.
So I don't think they would make a coaching change, would they?
I think he's a great coach. I don't think ownership and management is that reactive, right? Some managers and owners would say, okay, it's time. We didn't win. We failed twice in the first round. I don't know, like, who's going to be a better coach for that team at this point in time. So while I see Berube fitting in Toronto, if Keith was shown the door, I don't think it's the same in Boston, although there might be a little bit of strife in that room because you go out first round with a team that's so – here's the thing, Tim. When you watch that team play, they're so well coached, which means they really listen to the coach. Like, they block shots. They get in lanes. Their responsibility defensively is great. So I don't – because of the way they play and how well they play for Jim Montgomery, I think he would deserve one more shot even if they went out early.
Well, and you look at last year – They're 5 seconds away from going on to the second round with Marchand's breakaway. And then nobody's saying, oh, they had a tough time with Florida. Everyone's saying, oh, they had an easy time with Florida. They beat them in 5 games. That's what's so great about our sport. It's such a fine line. It's amazing. Last thing before I let you go, what did you think of the Lindy Ruff hire in Buffalo? Were you a little surprised?
No, I was more than a little surprised, to be honest with you. But I guess familiarity breeds contempt. They know what they have in Lindy Ruff. Look, it wasn't except I thought Buffalo would turn the corner this year. I picked them to be third in the division because they had all the opponents. They're young on defense. Tage Thompson had a huge year last season. Not so much this year. And they're the biggest tease because you know what happened, Tim? They played well at the end of the season. So when you look at the standings, oh, they missed by 4 points. Oh, they're right there. They're right there.
Wow.
But, you know, I always joke when I always talk about Buffalo, I always say a prayer for the Buffalo Sabres fans when I go to sleep at night because they deserve a lot better. So if Granato wasn't the guy, then let's go with Lindy Ruff. He might have a short leash as well, but I was surprised with Ruff. I think there would be some other guy, some hot young coach to come in and do that. But they know what they know with Lindy Ruff, and he did a good job in New Jersey. A lot of injuries this year. So, yeah, but I was more than surprised they went back to him as the head man for next season.
Yeah, you know what? You just made a good point, too. They had a lot of injuries this year. They definitely had subpar goaltending, right?
The GM did not help him. And here's the thing about that, Tim. Like, Tom Fitzgerald knew 3 months ago that he needed a goaltender.
Right.
And he waited and waited and waited to get Jake Allen. And he waited too long. And that didn't help Lindy. That was the bad part of that. So when you say, well, I believe it for Buffalo, like, if Fitzgerald went and got a goalie in January, they're probably in the playoffs even with all the injuries. So that's, I think, one of the mitigating circumstances of why Lindy's going to get another shot in Buffalo.
Well, listen, buddy, I will let you go. Enjoy the game tonight in Edmonton. I'll be watching. Keep up the great work on SiriusXM. You're the best. And on the fourth period. And thank you for always having my back as well. I appreciate it. And have a great night, okay?
Peel, it's great being on Snipes and Stripes with you. Happy to do it again anytime.
Thanks, buddy. Take care.
Cheers.
That is the great Dennis Bernstein. The guy is a wealth of knowledge when it comes to hockey. He's been around the game for 30, 40 years and his knowledge of all the teams, it's remarkable. I'm amazed every time I have people on like this because it's incredible to listen to them. And
you know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.